Good. I think we can proceed while the pickup is happening. Without much further ado, I would like to let JJ introduce Dr. Olive.
Well, Sean Olive is one of those guys that used to hang out in Canada with Floyd Toll. He told me to make it short, so now he's, chief something or other or something like that at Harman. He knows a lot about audio, and, come on, talk.
So, do I have a mic?
Do I have to turn it on?
No, it's on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're there.
I'm there.
There's no live sound. It's acoustic.
Oh,
old school.
That's just for recording.
I don't know if it's working until I hear feedback.
What? So, you don't happen to have a laser pointer?
Yeah, I got one.
So, anyway, I'll start. So, tonight I want to talk a bit about headphones. And someone already introduced Todd Welty. That's an interesting story that I'll send back to him. Todd's a very... He likes data. He likes information. I somehow suspect he's an atheist. The other author is Beth McMullen, who's just joined us 2 years ago. And this is a team effort, so anything I talk about tonight is, these people deserve credit as well. So about 2 years ago, we got interested in headphones, and up until that point, I've mostly been focusing on loudspeakers, acoustics of rooms, and how speakers interact with rooms, and I never thought that headphones were going to be as popular, because in 1985, I met Floyd at the National Research Council in Ottawa, and I had a pair of headphones as a student that I just threw out and never thought I'd ever use them again. But, with the iPod, the iPhone, smartphones, the last few years, there's been an explosion in headphone. I think it's now an $8 to $9 billion business annually. But what the funny thing was as we started to listen to them and measure them, they were all over the map, and it kind of reminded us of loudspeakers 30 years ago, where everyone had an opinion, but there were no scientific listening tests. Everyone was measuring them differently, and it all seemed like deja vu. So we said, why don't we just sort of apply the same kind of science to headphones and see if we can come up with a better understanding of how they work and how to measure them and whether people like them. And if you look in the literature, we found that there weren't many standards, meaningful standards. There was this standard that recommended they be diffuse field calibrated or free field calibrated. But when you start measuring manufacturers, you find that very few of them are actually applying it. And even within the same manufacturer, you find one model to the next are entirely different. It's like there's no design philosophy at all. And the challenge is that control tests are pretty easy to do on speakers. You can put a curtain up and hide the brand, hide the nuisance variables. But with a headphone, it's difficult to do. So as a result, there haven't been any tests really recorded in the literature, very few. But we had to get, in order to understand what people like and how to measure a headphone, you have to do a listening test, because it's really the perception and the subjective ratings that tell you what matters. So that was the first challenge. So the questions we asked ourselves, how do we do a control blind test? Is there a preferred target response, which is essentially the frequency response? And we speculated maybe since 99% of all recordings people listen to through headphones were designed and mixed to sound good through loudspeakers. So we thought maybe that would be a good starting point. And then at the time, Harman had gone through a lot of hiring and reorganization, and we had a whole new bunch of marketing people on staff. And not knowing much about audio, they thought they just... follow the money, and what manufacturer sells the most headphones, they must have a magical sound. And and because mostly kids are buying them, and we don't like the sound, they said, well, maybe kids have different tastes. So this is a question that keeps getting thrown around again. And then finally, there was this question from marketing whether different cultures had different tastes. Over the years, we've heard the same thing about loudspeakers, that Germans like very bright sound, British like tight bass, Americans like big boomy bass, and the Japanese like no bass, they like bright sound. These are the sorts of things that I've been told by marketing departments and even audio researchers. So in the last 2 years, we've published, 4 of these papers have been published. These 2 are going to be presented at AES in Los Angeles. But we've been fairly open about our research findings and sharing it with the world. And the hope is that people will test it, they'll argue it, and perhaps, if there's a consensus, maybe we can come up with a standard. There's no point in trying to patent this stuff because anyone can go out and measure a headphone and find easily what the target is. So we've presented a bunch of papers, and I'm going to talk about this one. I'm not going to talk about this one, and I'll briefly talk about this one. And this one you'll actually have to buy the paper or go to the convention. So that's the sales pitch for the LA convention. But it's going to be a really good convention. So the first paper, we basically just asked this question, do trained listeners agree on what makes a headphone sound good? And we selected some headphones, some popular ones, some ones that are highly regarded, the Audis LCD2. If you look through any of the InterFidelity or any of the hi-fi websites, you'll find that people really, there's a big enthusiastic crowd for this. Of course, this headphone, I think, is the number one selling headphone, so we had to throw that in there. This is also a very popular headphone. I flew today from L.A. And everyone in first class had these headphones. And anytime you fly anywhere, you always see people in business class wearing these. So it's a very popular headphone. And this one we just included because it was really popular amongst a certain demographic of young consumers. And the other thing I want to point out, the price range is quite wide. And we have different types of headphones. So we have open back, closed. This is open. We've got closed with active noise cancellation. Same here. And this is a standard closed headphone. So our first stab at doing a blind test, we brought in a subject. We had a test administrator. And they would simply substitute these 4 sets of headphones at a time. So we did level matching, and the listener would basically give ratings on each headphone. And whenever they switched to a different headphone, the administrator had to go do this method of substitution. So it's a fairly time-consuming, terrible task for the listener, terrible for the administrator. But we're essentially removing things like brand, price, and celebrity endorsement from the test. What we couldn't remove is the fact that every headphone weighs, has a different weight, and the Audis is clearly the heaviest one. It feels like you've got a clamp on your head. It's got a very high clamping force. So after 2 or 3 trials, the listener starts to say, well, that's the heavy one that really hurts my ears. Last time I gave it a 7, I think I'll give it the same rating. So we haven't completely removed the biases, but at least we're removing visual and psychological biases related to brand, price, and appearance. So what we found with these trained listeners, we did several trials with different music, and these are the mean ratings for those 6 headphones. And these green dotted curves are the perceived spectral balance of the headphone. So we've trained our listeners when they hear speakers or automobiles or headphones in their minds, they can actually draw in several bands what they think the spectral balance is. And obviously, if they think it's flat and smooth, there's an association that sounds good and they give it a higher rating. This headphone here, they thought it was kind of thin sounding, even though it measures pretty flat in the bass. This one was a bit of a, this one they thought was a bit boomy. This headphone, it was interesting because they said overall it sounds rather thin, even though the measured frequency response shows a bass boost. And what we found was this is a closed back headphone where you have to have a very good seal in order to get decent bass. And what we found, we started measuring this headphone by putting microphones in listeners' ears and actually measuring the transfer function. We found that it was highly variable depending on how it fit the listener. So right away, we've identified a nuisance variable here, that if you don't get a good seal, a good fit, you're going to get a lot of variability in the listener's ratings. And this is, so you have to be very careful of closed headphones when you read reviews. If you send it to 5 reviewers, you might get a different review depending on how well it fit them. The same is true with in-ear headphones. The last headphone you can see, this is very, I'm trying to remember which one. Yeah, this is a very popular headphone. You can see it's got a big suck out here. People perceive it as sounding boomy. And lastly, we got this quite colorful headphone. I'm talking about the sound, not the color. It's perceived as being very boomy, very dull, and it got the lowest rating. So this is all measured on a standard ITU pinna with an ear simulator made by Grass. So these are all pretty standard measurements. You can go out and buy this and be in the business of measuring headphones tomorrow. But how we measure these, we do several reseedings. So we do usually 5 or 6 reseedings so that we average out any errors related to how it fits, how it's positioned on the measurement device.
Quick question.
Yeah.
On these plots, are they roughly the same kind of y-axis scaling?
Yeah, they're all 10 dB between.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it goes from 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz.
So for the off-axis data, you just have to turn your head.
Yeah.
Stand.
So we generally found good agreement, notwithstanding these leakage effects that vary among listeners. And listeners generally preferred the headphones, which they perceived as being the most neutral and evenly balanced. And we found, although we haven't calculated, there seems to be good correlation between the measured response and the perceived spectral balance and the preference rating. This was encouraging because it's not a random thing. There's actually a relationship between how it measures and how it's preferred. And then we found that this bass leakage is a real issue that we have to pay attention to and control when we do tests. So the next experiment we did, we were, rather than measure a bunch of headphones and figure out empirically what people prefer, let's actually take a headphone and equalize it to different target responses and see is there a correlation between how it measures and what the preference is. So we looked at some of the standards, and one of the most popular ones since the 80s is this diffuse field calibration, and it's based on the premise that the headphone should produce the same acoustic response at the eardrum as a speaker in a diffuse sound field. So if you were put a speaker in a very reflective diffuse field, like a reverberation chamber, they're saying that's what you should measure at the headphone. The free field is basically based on the same premise, except it should be what you would measure if you had a speaker in an anechoic chamber. So right away, this standard doesn't seem to make much sense because when we listen to speakers in rooms, most of the time, a typical room is neither diffuse nor free field. You're getting a combination of a very strong direct sound, but depending on the room and the directivity of the speaker, you're also going to get some strong first reflections. There's no way that a typical room is anywhere near a free field or a diffuse field, but it's somewhere in between. The other thing is this standard ignores the fact that most recordings are made in rooms where you get some reinforcement from the room and the bass in particular. And it can be anywhere from 3 to 6 dB, depending on how close you put the speakers to a boundary, depending on the size of the room. But, you know, just instinctively, if you play a recording through a headphone that's flat in the bass, it's going to sound too thin because it was made in a monitoring situation that was a lot different than that. So we said, you know, headphones that are calibrated to these standards are going to sound too thin and too bright for most recordings. So we went into our room. This is a reference. This is a room we designed at Harman. There's several of them, but it's basically a room that's supposed to simulate an average domestic room. We basically went in there and we basically measured at the eardrum the average response from a 7-channel system. And we did spatial averaging with the head at different head positions. And that became sort of what we considered the in-room loudspeaker response. And these are the 7 channels those speakers measured using spatial averages. And you can see that this is before we apply our target curve to the speaker, but they're basically very similar. So on that basis, we then applied different equalizations to that target response. So we had the original headphone with no EQ equalized to a diffuse field response based on work done by Hammershaw and Moeller. Another one based on Moeller. Then we had this one. This was based on a study by Lorho, who he was at Nokia at the time. I think he's now at Apple designing headphones. But his idea was that the diffuse field response has this 10 dB bump at about 3 kilohertz, and based on listening tests, he thought it should be about 3 dB. So he's greatly reduced this resonance at 3K, and of course the bass is flat. Then we had a free field target response, and then we had one based on the target we measured of a speaker in a room, and there were slight variations. One where it was based on the speaker equalized to a target curve that we'd used before, and one where it's slightly modified with less bass and less treble. So we did this experiment using 2 different headphones, one that was relatively inexpensive, but it's an open back, and we found that this headphone is very consistent, so we measured it on many listeners, and it because it's open and it fits people well, there's very little variation due to leakage. And then finally we did this same test through a very expensive headphone that is highly praised for its sound quality. And it's also open back, so it's a good headphone for doing these tests. So we had listeners evaluate these different targets. They were trained listeners, and we used 3 different music programs with 1 repeat. So in the first test, we found that this new target based on a speaker in a room was the most preferred. It was strongly preferred over the diffuse field by Moeller, as well as a slight variation. The one by Lorho was basically tied with that. And then we had the unequalized headphone, and the free field was the least preferred out of all the choices.
What did the response of the JBL Target 1 look like?
I can show you that in a few more slides.
Sure.
Is your scale linear? So if you multiply any of those to...
No, it's a preference scale, so most of these scales are not quite linear. There's a lot of scaling biases that can creep in. But the way we define this scale is if it's more than 2 points, that represents a strong preference. 1 point separation is a moderate preference, and 0.5 point is a slight preference. So if you look at the next test where we use the Audis LCD2, This is a slightly modified target where we have less bass and less treble. It was strongly preferred over the original target, and again, we find that the free field is the least preferred, and the unequalized headphone is somewhere in the middle. So we found that overall, this target response that tries to simulate a speaker in a room was preferred over the standards. And that people, even though this had a bit of a bass boost, people thought it was the most neutral and balanced. So even though we're adding some room gain to the headphone target, people don't perceive it as being boomy or bass heavy. So the third experiment we did was we kind of stepped back and said, we're trying to simulate a speaker in a room, but we haven't really done a lot of tests on whether that speaker in-room target is optimal or whether it could be further improved. So we did this experiment where we did two experiments, one where we had people adjust the bass and treble levels until they preferred it, to a speaker that we've equalized to have a flat in-room response in our reference room. And then we did the same experiment where we had this relatively flat response measured at the eardrum, and then they would do the same experiment where they would adjust the bass and treble. And we did it two different ways. We were curious whether you'd get a different answer if you adjusted these at the same time or whether you adjusted them one at a time. So I'm just going to talk about the two-parameter adjustment. So we took a loudspeaker, which we knew to be pretty flat, pretty smooth. This is a Revel F208, and this is the direct sound, the listening window, the first reflections, the sound power. The black one there is actually the predicted in-room response, and then you have the two directivity indices on the bottom. So if you put that in a room, you're going to hear reasonably flat direct sound, and the first reflections are going to be relatively similar, although at high frequencies the speaker's becoming directional, so you see it falls off. So we went into the room and we measured that speaker, and then we did the same thing. We put our ear simulator in the room and matched the headphone response to that same in-room target. And this is the headphone, the HD800, without any equalization. So that's how it measures without any EQ applied. So again, we went into this room, and this time we just measured it using two loudspeakers. We did a spatial average. And this is the speaker before EQ measured in the room, and then we basically equalize it so it has a flat in-room response. So this is what the headphone looks like after we've equalized it to that target response.